You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armorall, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armorall products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at Armorall.com. Armorall, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome to another edition of DNF. I'm Jessica Smetana, he's Spencer Hall, and we have a new Formula One Drivers Champion. Woo!
Yay! Who is it?
It's Max Verstappen.
No.
And that's all we have to say about that.
No.
There's so much more to talk about, Spencer. Actually, before we move on, I do want to ask you, what was more anticlimactic? Max winning the Drivers Championship in the sprint race in Qatar because Sergio Perez DNF'd, or Max Verstappen winning last year in Japan after no one knew exactly whether or not he won because they only raced like half of the laps or whatever and he got half points? But which one was more anticlimactic to you?
I think this year, because it was the next one. They get more and more anticlimactic the deeper we go into this run. So okay. I would say that the funnier one was last year, right?
It was pretty funny.
Although Checo bombing out of the sprint does have a little sort of like a little Susan of irony there, right? Like,
it does.
How did Red Bull do this weekend? Well, there was some good news and some bad news.
Well, one of them won the championship, and the other one is now meeting with a sports psychologist because he is driving so poorly. But yeah, I mean, it was a little anticlimactic because they still had to race on Sunday. Like, it wasn't like, mm-hmm. you know, if it had at least happened on Sunday in the middle of the race, then I think it's easier to, like, have a celebration. But it was like... just on Saturday. I don't think the Saturday races get as high of ratings as the Sunday races. I know they're like trying the new format with the sprint shootout and everything like that. So mm-hmm. it was just a very like, oh, okay, that happened. But like, we all knew it was going to happen anyway. So it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Like, the definition of anticlimax is the current standings for the Constructors' Championship. Red Bull has 657 points and Mercedes has 326. 326. That's a lot more. That's double. That's double what Mercedes
and it's pretty much all Max at this point. In the last three races, Sergio Perez has only scored 5 points to Verstappen's 69.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's a lot of points. It's a lot of points for Verstappen and Red Bull.
Yeah, which leaves us to find, of course, drama for the rest of the season. Just in case guys going 195 miles an hour in cars aren't enough, if that's not enough danger for you. And we will talk about that in a minute, okay? Mm. And about what that means for drivers to be in peril and what the correct degree of peril is.
Let's talk about it now.
Yeah. So, this is, Qatar is, the track itself, Losail, I believe is how you pronounce it. Not the most fun experience for drivers.
Hmm.
Drivers, this is necessarily a stressful position to be in as an F1 driver. Like, they are not just athletes, but to some extent they are endurance athletes because they are in stressful positions for long periods of time in extreme conditions. It was 31 degrees Celsius at the track with, I believe, 70% humidity.
Can you translate that into American for me? It's like 88 degrees or something like that, right?
Yeah, we're looking at Houston. That's it. This is, if you want to know what it would feel like, it would feel like, imagine Houston, but sandy. Right?
Okay.
With a fair amount of grit in the air. And at a race where, Jessica, there were some unusual conditions in terms of how the race had to be run.
Okay. Sunday. Have you seen what the pyramid curbs look like up close? Because I heard about them like all day on Saturday, and I was like, okay, what is that? What does this actually mean? This is a pyramid curb. If you're watching this on YouTube, like, this is what the problem was. These are like daggers sticking out of the ground on the curb, causing all sorts of issues for Pirelli and for Formula One this weekend. But that's not even like the most dangerous part of the circuit, and they had to make some adjustments because of the tires, which I know we'll talk about. But okay, go on with your point, Spencer, because you have an interesting angle on all of this, I think.
Right. So we had to run a three-stop race due to limitations on the tire and the curbs, because what do F1 drivers do at every point? They look for an advantage, right? They look to not exceed track limits, but to come as close to them as possible without exceeding them. Which some drivers were less than successful at on Sunday.
And Saturday.
It's just an issue there when you're talking about these
deleting massive lap times.
These massive spiky hillocks that they're going to take these, multi-million dollar race cars over at extremely high speeds. You're going to shred some tires. Even if there aren't structural issues with the tires, which there were issues with the tire itself holding together.
Right. The explanation that I read is like so far over my tiny unscientific head. But essentially, like, the frequency, like the sound frequency that occurred when the tires went over these pyramid curbs was like the exact type of frequency to cause like this failure of the integrity of the tire itself. Like, it wasn't like, oh, they're spiky and they're causing like punctures all over, what, something like that. Like, it was like an issue in the frequency. Is that right?
It's something close to right.
It sounds crazy.
It almost gets into Nikola Tesla territory. Nikola Tesla thought he had a machine that could hit the resonant frequency of a building bring the whole thing down.
I watched The Prestige, and I still don't know what that guy's deal was.
Right. Like that, but for a tire.
Right.
That's what we're talking about.
One of the examples that I thought was the only one that made sense to me was like an opera singer singing a song at a pitch high enough to crack glass. That was what it was described as on Mist Apex. And I was like, I think I get that. I didn't know that was an actual real thing and not something that just happens on cartoons. But I get the sentiment here.
That is, by the way, such an F1 owner's way of understanding it. You know, like when you're at the opera, yeah? And you're holding a fine glass of champagne, yes. And the singer, she sings so loud that it just shatters it and it goes all over your tux. And then you drive home.
$5 million tux.
Yeah, you drive home in your Lamborghini and go, yeah. It's ruined.
Mamma mia, yeah.
This is, to return to where I think we need to go in this discussion. There's a lot of hue and cry about the conditions at this track. I don't think anyone particularly enjoys this track a whole lot, except for Fernando Alonso, who appeared to be totally fine.
Well, he did ask the pit crew. He asked his engineer if the pit crew could dump water on his ass.
Yeah.
During a pit stop at one point, I believe.
Anything. He was begging for anything.
He was like, please dump water on my ass because my ass is on fire. I am paraphrasing here, but it was essentially along those lines.
Yeah. And post-race, this obviously took a lot out of the drivers. Logan Sargeant, who, per James Falls, was fine before the race and displayed no signs of illness during the race, became so sick and so overwhelmed in the conditions that he retired. Yeah. And it, by the way, retired after sticking it out for a while. To Sargeant's credit, it did not seem like an easy out for him.
No.
Volz was like, hey, do you want to retire? And he said, no. And then eventually said, yeah, no, man, I got to go.
And he's from Florida. That's how humid it was. I mean, he moved to Europe when he was like 14, but still.
Yeah.
Very humid conditions. Yeah. I felt a little bad listening to that interaction over his radio because he's had a pretty atrocious stint with Williams and has crashed this weekend, has had a lot of crashes. And you could tell he didn't want to, like, you know, I don't want to say give up, but that is like the athlete mentality is that you're giving up at that point. But like, it's incredibly dangerous to be, you know, on the verge of passing out, driving a expensive car very fast.
Yeah. Furthermore, you saw drivers doing something I haven't seen very often.
Yeah, opening the visors. Yes. Yuki Tsunoda said when he opened his, he got like a face full of sand, but they were just like desperate for a draft.
Right. They couldn't win. They couldn't win. If they opened their visor, they got a face full of sand. Lance Stroll, I thought he had a very eye-opening interview after the race regarding the conditions, saying that when he was going, that for the last 20 laps or so, they could barely see.
That's pretty good.
Just due to sweat getting in your eyes, I imagine there had to be condensation on the inside of that helmet. After a while, visibility was a nightmare. That's not something you want when you're driving a race car.
Yeah, and if you're Esteban Ocon, there's puke inside your helmet because apparently he vomited on himself 15 laps in, which sounds horrible.
Not that he should have to race in these conditions, but shouts out to Esteban Ocon for finishing in the top 10 while puking in your helmet.
That's crazy. Like that, I hate puke. I would never last in Formula One for like 1,000 different reasons. But puking inside a like tight helmet sounds like one of the worst possible things that a person would have to endure for over an hour.
Yeah, it's a NASA grade problem. If you want to know how bad it is, it's like things that you worry about when you're talking about astronauts and space travel. That's what you're talking about.
It's so gross.
It's gross, but man, you toughed it out. Well done, Esteban Ocon. And after the race, you saw Lance Stroll get out, immediately leaned on an ambulance, like was just like walked over, like, okay, listen, I need a minute. Drivers were obviously exhausted. Albon was wiped after the race. You saw guys laying on the floor after the race. And this led to a discussion of, all right, is this even safe to have these guys racing in these conditions?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Which, you know, you don't have to tweet. Let's just review the policies here. Jessica, no one has to tweet. It's not necessary.
Never post, as I like to say. As I post, yes.
If you got doubt in your heart, don't tweet.
Yeah.
And I say that for a number of reasons. One, no risk taken and nothing to earn. Simply, like, nobody's going to give you a large check for a tweet. It's not going to happen, right? So just, if you feel hesitant at all, don't tweet. And that goes for Martin Brundle, who, you know, by the way, I love Martin Brundle. Like, Martin Brundle's absolutely hilarious. He's an integral part of the broadcast experience. He's, like, you have to respect him for, you know, his deep racing experience and the amount that he knows about F1, which is, like, 5 million times more than anyone on this podcast or listening to this podcast knows. Like, just a dude is an encyclopedia of F1 knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
So when he says this, he says it from a place of knowledge and maybe not insight, which is... It's races like Qatar and very rainy days, which make F1 drivers look like the heroes and athletes they are. Absolutely don't buy into the weak view that we shouldn't put them through this kind of challenge. Check out Senna in Brazil, Stewart at rainy Nürburgring, Lauda post-crash, etc., etc. I want to say that Martin's half right here.
Okay, he's half right. Which half?
That part of the sport's intrigue and appeal is risk and endurance. Like, I think those two things are super important to the equation. And I don't want to say, like, oh, that's cool. I like putting people in, you know, 50 degrees Celsius boxes for my entertainment. That's not the point, okay? I don't ever want it to cross over into sadism, right? For my entertainment.
That's what we have college football for.
Correct. That's what we have football. That's what we have MMA for, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, it would be very weird to see somebody making this. And if I went on there making this point, you know, oh God, we have to protect the drivers. And if I see a single UFC tweet on there, I'll be like, sure about that. But I think he's half right. I don't think it's. I don't think that that racing in Qatar is good for the drivers at all. I mean, I think it's absolutely disastrous. And I think that there should be allowances, especially when it comes to hydration. I don't think they have. I don't think they have hydration systems in the helmets that are necessarily up to speed. I think
they have like their little straws that, and there are issues with them that we see like all the time. Like if one of them falls or something and then they can't get water for a race. Yeah.
We can't figure out a decent hydration system for drivers. That seems dumb. It seems like that should be a weight allowance. Like you should be allowed, like, okay guys, like build a car that's at least semi-humane in terms of how we're going to hydrate drivers. That's every other sport has elaborate, overly elaborate systems devoted to hydration. Like, especially like consider, you know, football, consider what we have for basketball, baseball, soccer. Soccer, we have water breaks, right? Like that's what we had in Qatar. Qatar, like that's, if you want to know the most, like my biggest complaint here is to go, why can't we figure out a way to like adequately hydrate a driver during a race? Okay. Because we did it for soccer in the same environment.
That was they hosted the World Cup like 2 months later than they normally, well, I guess like 4 months later than they normally do because of the weather conditions there. Like they started the World Cup in November last year.
Right.
And I do know that next year, this race is on the schedule in November, or it might even be in December. I can't remember exactly what the date is, but it's later in the year, I think, with the hope that the conditions will not be quite as horrendously hot and humid. But I mean, I think when it comes to like the appeal of Formula One and risk and endurance being a part of it, like I think it kind of depends who you ask. Like I wonder if like the newer Formula One fans have a different relationship to like the danger in F1 to ones that have been a fan since it was much more dangerous, since they're like, you know, they're in like the most recent Formula One seasons, like they've made huge strides in terms of safety of the car and adding the halo and all of these other things. And then I think to have like someone as prominent as Martin Brundle advocate, not necessarily advocate for risk, but to call it weak to be risk averse, I think as a fan,
that's the trigger word here.
Right. Like that's where I feel like he's out of touch with what modern F1 fans want and what F1 should be like, who F1 should be appealing to if they want to grow, because I think there is a limit to how many fans you can attract to a sport where you're acknowledging that like the people, like the stars of the sport, are in constant danger all the time.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm like, he lost me there. Like, do I think that Formula One should be like take out all variables to make it everything the same and to make everything like completely risk averse? Like, I don't think that's possible. And like,
right.
I joke about football, but I think football is a great example of like, it's inherently dangerous. There have been lots of changes to the sport in the last 50 years. There's been lots of changes to the sport in the last like 2 years and how it's officiated to try to make it safer. But I don't know if it's ever going to be quote unquote safe for players to play it. And that's like a question that I think people who watch it have to ask themselves when they watch it, like how comfortable, like what's your comfort threshold for like the danger you're willing to watch people put themselves in for your entertainment? And I would just venture to guess that like as time moves on and like safety precautions get better and we have more knowledge of like adverse health effects, like that threshold gets lower and lower and instead of getting higher and higher.
Yeah, like Martin Brundle committed to his racing career at the age of 12. When he was 12,
that's crazy.
That was the year 1971, which means that Martin Brundle's understanding of risk in Formula One and what he at one point in his life accepted included a very real chance of death.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like the killer years are real.
Right.
And Martin Brundle thought, right, I'm good with that. And those people were going to be racing anyway. As a spectator, you carry a smidge of that kind of hazard to say, all right, what I'm watching is inherently dangerous. Mm-hmm. How dangerous? It's not about me. These people are willing to accept that. I have to accept whether I'm willing to watch it and like have my viewing dollars and or interest and views support that.
Right.
And in the case of something like Cutter, I'm like, but just listen, I'm okay with the idea that you're taking risks by driving at high speed. I am. Like, that's part of the thrill. I'm willing to watch somebody push themselves to the limit. I do it in all kinds of sports. Do I want it to be as safe as possible? Yeah. Do I understand that, like, once in a blue moon, there's going to be a lightning strike where they go over that edge? Sure. Sure. Do I think it's stupid to race in the middle of the desert when you can't figure out how to hydrate a driver? Yeah. That's dumb that we haven't. That we haven't made allowances, that you have a sport that spends this much money and this much wind tunnel time on creating the perfect machine, and you don't have some sort of allowance for everybody to have a basic way of getting the driver a drink during a race. Like, everybody's improving. And that to me seems wild that it's that far down on the list. I guess what I'm advocating for is, like, a slightly more humane sense of engineering when it comes to the car.
Well, I think that, like, where Martin Brundle's coming from is a point of view of, like, you have no idea, like, the conditions that I've raced in, just from, like, a engineering standpoint, like, how dangerous it is. So to hear drivers, like, to use a British term, whinging about being hot is, like, a little, like, silly. And I think that's where, like, you have to ask yourself, like, what, you know, maybe to some people it's like, okay, it's just hot, like, who cares? But I think you have to actually, like, consider the risks of losing control of your car in a high-speed corner because you've passed out from dehydration or exhaustion or whatever,
right,
heat stroke, and, like, how risky that really is comparable to any sort of engineering malfunction, right? Like, we're talking about drivers going over 100 miles an hour into a turn and not being able to, A, like, breathe properly because, you know, you're pulling G's constantly when you're, like, adjusting the speed and the velocity of these cars. And also, like, not able to see properly and not able to get, like, the basic, like, biological things you need into your body to stay awake because you're so hot. Like, it's not, like, an imaginary, like, oh, they're crying about being hot. Like, these is like at some point, like, you can develop a medical condition. Like, it's very, very serious. So I think that, like, the descriptor of weak is 100% missing the point in all of this. Like, it is not weak to pass out from heat stroke. Like, it is a medical condition.
it's wild for me that people don't consider that, and that you are a collateral risk to everyone on the track.
Exactly.
If that's
yeah.
not taken care
exactly.
of.
Exactly. Yeah. That's
a,
like,
great
the other
point, Jessica.
The other big thing is, like, yeah, you could lose control of your car and it could hurt someone else, like, grievously. So I don't know. I mean, this is, like, one of those situations where I don't remember, like, hearing the drivers complaining about the temperature before the race. Like, it didn't seem like there was any, like, there have been safety situations like Saudi Arabia last year where drivers had a meeting the night before a race because there was a missile strike, I think, like, a mile or so away from the track, and players were really concerned about their safety and they had, like, a caucus and they ended up racing. And I remember then a ton of F1 media and journalists kind of arguing about, like, the safety and all of these things and whether or not they should have raced. And I don't think that happened this weekend because I think that the conditions on Sunday were partially exacerbated by the three pit strategy that all of the teams had to do because of the pyramid curve. So, like, there are certain aspects of it that 100% could have been prevented. Like, the circuit having curbs that cause, like, this high frequency, like, vibration or whatever that screws up the tires is something that, like, maybe they could have tested for beforehand. I'm not exactly sure. I know this circuit has been sort of revamped and remodeled since the last time they raced there. But yeah, there are certainly things that made it worse than what it had to be. Like, it was not just the weather. It was also the fact that the drivers there was no tire management in this race. They were going flat out. I mean, I think Oscar Piastri said that it was basically like doing a qualifying lap every single lap because after 18 laps, they had to pit. So there was just no opportunity to really, like, put it in, you know, cruise control and just manage tires. They were just going so fast the entire time on these fresh tires. And that, I think, was a variable that it was like a perfect storm of shit. Mm-hmm. And the drivers had to deal with a lot this weekend. Luckily, no one got hurt. But I do think that, like, these are certainly things that need to be considered in the future when it comes to temperature, when it comes to, like, I don't think F1 will ever do, like, a mandatory pit thing. I don't think that that works. I don't think it made the race better or more interesting. I think it actually like caused a little bit less excitement than there could have been. But yeah, it was interesting to see the response from certain people in the sport about this, because I don't know if they're on the same page with a lot of what, you know, fans want to see.
Yeah. Additionally, this is a problem that's not going away. It's not like anything's getting any cooler.
Yeah, right. It's only going to be, this is going to happen in Montreal next year, because we are in hell, literally.
Yeah. Hey, on a happy transition, shall we take some listener Q&As?
Yeah, we should do that.
Or some listener Qs and see if we can provide them with the A's.
We should solicit listener A's at some point. And then we think of what the Q was. A little like Jeopardy style. How about that?
You know what? I'm going to talk about a positive, since we just spent a long time using about danger and the potential negatives of the sport.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
From Dakota Moyer, are we prepared to talk about how good Oscar Piastri might be? So I know Oscar's getting comfy, and this is how I know Oscar's getting comfy. And it's not just race finishes, because obviously, consistently lurking around the top three and four, that's easy. I can show you that. Everyone can see that. It's right up there on the podium, okay? What I can't show you is the clip that I saw of him post-race when he asked about the George Russell, Lewis Hamilton brouhaha. And when he found out that George had accidentally wrecked Lewis. And it was an accident. They hashed it out, and Lewis admitted fault in the crash. When he found out about it, Oscar Piastri, the rookie, made this noise.
Ha ha ha! George can do it.
But who caused it to start?
Lewis. I mean, George couldn't have done anything else.
What, was it Lewis and George that crashed?
Yeah.
Wow. Thank you, Mercedes.
He's got a funny sense of humor. I will say, I like the meme of him where he's like making a face at the camera that always pops up here and there. Okay. My thing about Oscar Piastri is that I want to answer that question with a statement, which is that Lando Norris needs to win a race. He needs to win a race. Daniel Ricciardo beat him to it at McLaren, which is like crazy considering how things have gone since that Monza race, and now Piastri has beat him to it at McLaren. It was a sprint race, but still, like, Lando needs to win something, because Oscar Piastri is very, very good. That is a fact.
He's real good, and he's on a team, by the way, if you want to know how things are generally going for McLaren and how good they're going. McLaren, after starting off the season dead in the water, is currently just 11 small points behind Aston Martin. But Aston Martin, who we swore, like, there you go. They're going to be like the number three team. We're good.
Well, I think that there's more to say about Lance Stroll there than there is to say about Aston Martin, like, as a car. Like, did they like front load their development? Yes. McLaren did like kind of the opposite of that, and like Aston Martin hasn't been able to keep up. But also, if they had like half of the production that Lando or Oscar could get you in that car, like, I think that gap would be bigger right now. Like, they would have scored a lot more points at the beginning of the season.
A very serious follow-up to that thought, Jessica, which is from B-Will 2108. Who would be more competitive in the second Aston Martin seat against Fernando? And these are some great candidates. Thank you for a serious question, B-Will. Wario, two kids in a trench coat, Tom Cruise, or Lance Stroll?
I mean, obviously Wario.
I could admit he's not fitting in the cockpit, though.
Really? His head's too big.
No. He's a thick boy, right? Like, I race.
Is he?
Wario, he's got that fullback build. So he's not getting in the car.
Wario weight. Mm-hmm. Whoa, he's 308 pounds.
Yeah, he's a thick boy.
140 kilograms for our European listeners.
Yeah, he's built like a defensive tackle. So he ain't making it in the car. Second.
No, but no. He said it's just his clothes, according to the Wario World instruction.
Well, you can't trust what Wario says, Jessica. He's not a reliable narrator in his own story.
If we put on a race suit, he might.
I'm telling you.
So you're going with Tom Cruise because he's little then? Little guy?
The two kids in a trench coat, that's awkward, and I don't trust the communication there. You know, because famously the two kids in a trench coat wobble as they walk because right. It's very obvious.
Well, there's one kid with the hands on the pedals and one kid with steering, right?
Yeah, and that's too much. It's, you know, you need too much coordination between the clutch and the, yeah. I know the clutch is up here, but like you still need enough power for the pedals. And you have to stomp on that brake in an F1 car. Like you have really got to apply force. So I don't trust the kids. I don't bet against Tom Cruise because Tom Cruise is insane.
I think he could learn how to drive an F1 car well if he set his mind to it. Like maybe even like give him 6 months. Like he jumps off cliff sides and parachutes himself to safety.
Mm-hmm.
Like
at the age of like what, 62?
Yeah, he's like old. He's the right height and weight. I just googled it. He's 5'7", 65.
Yep.
Pretty little guy. Probably
he can get the car.
Probably comparable size to a few F1 drivers. Could definitely fit in the car. I don't know. I still go with Wario just because he's got like the mental capacity to, I think he would drive like Verstappen. I think he just needs to maybe, you know, change his look, change his outfit a little bit.
He would either drive like Verstappen or like Kimi. It's one or one or the other and nothing in between.
That's a great question though. Neither of us picked Lance Stroll. That's the bad part of it.
Well, how's this? Do you take the mediocrity that you know or the mediocrity that you don't know? Upside if I take the one I don't know.
I agree with you. I think it'd be funnier if Tom Cruise did it or if Wario did it than Lance Stroll. Because Lance Stroll at this point, like I do feel bad. Like there was I think the whole like controversy over the weather and the heat and everything kind of made the Lance Stroll side issue from Saturday disappear a little bit. Like he shoved a engineer in the paddock after he got out of his car and it didn't look good. He didn't look happy. He was giving like pretty short answers to the press. Like it was just like bottom barrel vibes for Lance Stroll.
Yep. And Nico Rosberg
wouldn't have done that.
Yeah. Nico Rosberg, when asked about it, said there was no excuse for it. Completely no patience whatsoever when asked about that. Yeah, I tend to agree. There's absolutely no reason, especially when, I don't know, man, you've had every advantage. And you could have had a top 10 finish, but had to serve a penalty on the race and ended up finishing out of the points. Just that's the thing that's not working about that team right now. That's it. Engineers did their job. You know, other driver did their job. Management has done their job.
Well, that includes his dad, who I don't know how you evaluate that.
It's a cutthroat business. And we're about to test the limits of exactly how cutthroat it can be.
Who gets let go of their Nepo baby job first? Lance or Brian Ferentz?
For those who don't know, Brian Ferentz is the offensive coordinator at the University of Iowa, who is the son of the head coach and whose offense is not just bad, but historically bad. And he is the manager in charge of it. Who gets let go first? I say Lance Stroll, because I don't think Iowa's ever going to get rid of that man. It's not happening. I know contractually they're obligated to right now, but they're just going to do something like, yeah, he's no longer offensive coordinator. He's co-offensive coordinator.
What is like that like quality control?
Yeah. they'll slide him over to quality control.
Yeah. Assistant to the offensive core, assistant passing game coordinator. It's like some bananas
clipboard,
right? Just something. Okay. I had a question that I wanted to ask you. Let me find it. Not F1, but it's Fat Bear Week. Spencer, I just found out what Fat Bear Week was like a week ago. I don't know how it's something that's like evaded my periphery for, I don't know how many years they've been doing Fat Bear Week. A, my question out of this statement is, can you explain what Fat Bear Week is to the audience if they don't know? And I assume this is something that you probably talk about on the full cast.
Oh, sure. Yeah, this is okay. a little bit of bleed over.
Formula One driver most likely to participate in Fat Bear Week.
It's Valtteri.
Yeah, okay, that was an obvious one.
I mean, it's in the woods, right? He's Finnish.
He loves national parks.
Loves like cycling. And by the way, you'd have to cycle to get into Katmai National Park because you can't drive there. There are no roads. Absolutely no roads. Katmai National Park, if you don't know, is in Alaska. It is massive. It's, I think, like, it might be bigger than Rhode Island. It's just this tremendous national park filled with bears. And at this point in the year, the bears all decide to fatten up as much as possible for the upcoming hibernation. And the staff at National Park Service Katmai decided to make a fat bear competition where they would gauge who had been the biggest and fluffiest, who had been the most successful hibernation prep bear of all, who could binge on the most salmon, really. And they get people to vote on that in a bracket. It was very clever. I'm glad that the people in Washington managed to come to some agreement as to what our budget should look like, because for a while, the fat bear contest was threatened by that. And that was actually like my second biggest concern with, you know, government shutdown was, okay, there's a lot of bad stuff that will happen. In addition to that, what about the fat bear contest?
Right. Does like the social media person for Fat Bear Week get furloughed? Right.
Yeah, they would. So probably. You wouldn't be able to have that. Right?
To me, that's an essential government position up there with like air traffic controllers and
these tweets. That's pretty much it. Yeah, these tweets are a matter of national interest. It's really what we're looking at here.
All the boxes in Mar-a-Lago, it was in intel on the fat bears for the next season of Fat Bear Week.
I did think the other guy who would I really want to do well with Fat Bear Week would be Charles Leclerc. Not that he's like inherently like vulnerable to bloat or to weight gain. It's just that I too saw that Photoshop of him as a NASCAR driver called Chucky Leclerc.
Chucky Leclerc.
Where he was a good like 70 pounds heavier. And I was like, I don't know, bro. You look pretty cool like that, actually.
Yeah. He didn't look great. It was kind of like if he were him and Wario had a baby. To go back to a previous question.
Listen, Wario's 100% a resident of of Monaco. Like, he lives in Monte Carlo.
He is evading all of his taxes.
Listen, somebody's been watching Cars 2, and I appreciate this. This is from He Was Sleep. Can we have an international Race of Champions-esque series with F1 drivers so we can see who's really feeling the need for speed? If you don't know what I'm talking about, Cars 2.
I don't. I've never seen a Cars.
Okay, so watch the first one because it's a good movie.
Okay.
Don't watch the second one. I did that. I made the mistake. It's the only children's movie I know that features a car torture scene.
Oh.
Yeah, Pixar got weird for a minute. I think somebody was going through something at that point. But Cars 2 does have a race setup where it's like a rally car, an F1 car, a NASCAR, and a Grand Prix, a GP car, a couple of different kinds of cars. And they all race on each other's setups.
Okay.
So it's like a dirt race, like a rally car race with an F1 car competing. And then there is a NASCAR race with a rally car competing, right? So it's all these bizarre setups. But I would love to see what F1 drivers would be capable of if we just keep switching up the vehicles, right?
Yeah.
I loved like when in the first Miami race before that, Yuki and Max, I believe, went out and raced swamp buggies, which are these.
That was great. Yeah.
Yeah.
In the Everglades.
And Yuki, by the way, won because, I don't know,
right.
He's the better swamp buggy driver.
Hey, I mean, I don't think like F1 driving talent necessarily translates to like every type of vehicle, right? Like, I think if I raced my Honda Accord versus Max Verstappen in my Honda Accord, like, I am winning that race. I know how that baby moves and I know how it hits corners, all right?
You think...
He won't have a clue how to drive.
You don't. So I'm going to revisit this. Let's just rewind this for the listener. Jessica Smetana, Honda, like, what model year are we talking here?
I think it's like 2009, I want to say.
You have a 2009 Honda Civic.
Accord.
The big Accord. Oh,
Civic's okay. a little
this changes everything.
Accord, I got a big ass trunk. Don't take that out of context.
Okay. So if you have a 2009 Honda Accord,
mm-hmm.
you believe that all things being equal, you beat Max Verstappen. In a time trial.
If I'm going from my nail appointment to my hair appointment, there is not a single race car driver, Formula One race car driver on earth who will get from point A to point B faster than me. In my
I still got Max in this. So we're going to see if we can set this up.
Okay. Call right. Christian, get him on the phone.
All I have to do is talk shit. That's all it'll take. I have to just tell Christian. I'll be like, my girl thinks she can take your driver. He'll be like, oh, this bollocks me.
Max Verstappen driving on these Miami roads, like these conditions in this country, there's no shot.
The lack of respect for the absolute lunatics these people are on and off the track.
Respect my lunacy, Spencer.
That's you know what?
That's your problem.
Granted, I need evidence. So this is partially why I'm
running late for a haircut. All right.
Mm-hmm. You think Max just doesn't understand the stress?
You don't understand the stress.
That's true. I get like 3 haircuts a year,
and one of them was last week. Shout out to Spencer's haircut.
Shout out to the haircut. Yeah, as smooth and as slick as AlphaTauri Racing, and with about as many wins per year. Podiums.
Maybe one less guy will make fun of your appearance this week.
That's good. I had some guy. I had some guy who said that he saw a younger picture of me and goes, "That's what." He's like, oh, okay, well, that's at least what Josh Gad's going to look like in middle age. And this dude straight up fucking looks like Buster. He looks like what? Buster Scruggs. Like, he looks like, and I was like, okay, Buster Scruggs.
I don't even think I know what you look like when you were younger. I think I met you at a point in your life where you've always looked like this.
Hold on, I can help you out here.
All right, show me.
I'm going to help you out.
It's not on Google.
No, it is not. It is not. But I can help you because there's a picture from what I think is the 2008 cocktail party, I believe, that I am going to paste into the chat. Who knows whether this makes the show, Doug? There we go.
So much suspense. Wow. You know, it does look like you, but without a beard.
Yeah. Same thing.
But, yeah. Wow.
But that is what I
love. Covering up a sharp jawline.
People don't believe me. They don't. Do we have time for one more question?
We do.
While you ponder the visage of a ghost of me from the past.
I've been staring at this for 2 minutes.
Let's answer this one.
Okay.
From JC Andrag. Is Perez in a genuine meltdown now? This is actually answering 3 or 4 different questions we've seen about Sergio and about Checo's performance down the stretch. And the answer is an obvious yes, because while his teammate and the rest of the team is soaring along, Checo is spiraling.
Yeah.
Absolutely spiraling. And this race, it's not like coming into this race, you go, okay, he's got to have a good weekend. And then he got three separate time penalties. Three for, I believe, exceeding track limits. He had a breach
which a bunch of people got.
Yeah. He had a breach of Parc Ferme regulations. Which is just, he got hit for every ticky-tack thing, in part due to the tires. That was what Sergio Perez believed was the cause. But like, it's his performance as of late has been so disappointing, and what Christian Horner called himself a shocker,
and a spiral.
It said he had a horrible weekend.
You don't want to hear that horrible word. Spiral or shocker. Yeah. They said that they really need to have like a sit down with him and figure out what's going wrong. That was the Christian Horner line on it after the race on Sunday. They're also racing in North America the next three races, I believe. There's only like less than a handful of races left, Spencer. Like this third of the season, I feel like, has flown by. But yeah, like maybe coming back to his more of his like home turf, being closer to home, will help him. I'm not sure.
I really hope so. Like, I don't think, because I don't speak for you. I love Checo.
I like him a lot. I have no issues with him.
I love when he is at his combative best. I think he's one of the most entertaining drivers just to watch in the way he handles a race. Something's not working. And I think like it's very hard for me. I know that technically he's pointed to a couple of different things, including of all things, his seating position. He said, "Oh, I was sitting too low in the car." Sure. And to me, like, you're in your own head when you go, "Well, I'm sitting too low." Now, he's not comfortable in the car itself. And that to me speaks of a larger discomfort with his position. Not to get too psychological, but that seems pretty obvious that he's just not in a good spot right now. And I don't know whether that goes back to that breakpoint moment in the season where we thought, well, Checo's going to be the obvious number two all the time. Right.
Or there might even be a battle for number one this year between the two. That was I think wishful thinking.
And in the last five races, like in our last six races, he's had one podium.
I do like that. I think as a response to A, like previous Mercedes drama, and B, like current Red Bull and other team drama, Mercedes after Lewis hit Russell and took himself out of the race on Sunday, Mercedes was like, everything's fine. We're going to post an Instagram of all the buddies hanging out together. And I do think you're seeing that as a direct response to like the bad things that are happening with some other teams and their drivers not getting along.
I don't think an Instagram post is going to fix it. Just a little suspicion based on everything I've seen this week. I don't think it's going to fix the world. I definitely don't think it's going to fix what's going on with Red Bull.
Will it fix Betty barking?
No. But you know what she's saying? She's saying we're out of time, which is out of time. That's our time limit. Thank you, Jessica Santana.
Thanks, Spencer.
Doug Chris Ron on production. Thank you for you for listening. And thanks to Martin Brundle for giving us enough to talk about for like 30 minutes. So this has been DNF. We will see you next week.
See you next week.
All right, y'all. I gotta get to the full cast.